Hey everybody, this is Alex, and this is Lunchbox Radio. Now, before we get started, I wanted to first apologize. I missed the most recent news show because I straight up forgot. Because, you know what's a bitch? A 13-hour time difference. It'll get you in ways you really don't expect. And one of those ways is, you stop quite knowing what day it is, and what that turns into is something that you've like never see coming in a million years. Even when you know it's gonna happen to you, because my trip to Japan was not my first international outing. I've been all over the world, but I'm never ready for fucking jet lag. It nails me every friggin' time. But on the trip back from Japan, in particular, what it does is it just shifts your time, so you're not sure quite what day it is at all, in a way that is like super new. Because I'm used to like European time differences. I'm not used to full day-night swap with a single common hour. That shit is wild. But on that note, I want to jump in to what we're talking about today, and just so you know, this might be a shorter episode because we're covering a one episode thing, and that thing is actually called 103 Mercies Dragon Domination. But what the internet knows it as, and we'll get to why I'm mentioning that in a second, is Ichiro Oda's Monster.
Anime considered. Lunchbox Radio.
Now, before we get into the show proper, I wanted to first say spoiler alert for this, for One Piece a little, but definitely for this. Because this is a 25-minute, essentially OVA that Netflix agreed to adapt from manga form into anime form. And we'll get to why I think they're doing stuff like that in a second. But I just wanted to put a big old spoiler warning on the front here, because there's no way to avoid talking about every inch of this 25-minute show. And that's also why it's probably going to be a shorter show, because there's just only 25 minutes of content in this thing. But on that note, let's hear less from me and more from I, as she gives us she takes us through the plot of the show, because obviously she'll do that better than I will.
You got it. Alex, Ichiro Oda's new anime on Netflix, titled Monsters, 103 Mercies Dragon Damnation, is an adaptation of his one-shot manga, Monsters. The story revolves around Ryuma, a legendary swordsman from 400 years ago, whose legend is still celebrated in the land of Wano. The anime focuses on Ryuma's adventures, including encounters with dragons and a mix of samurai and knightly themes. Sung-Hoo Park, known for his work on Jujutsu Kaisen Season 1, directs this anime, which premiered in January 2024. The plot includes Ryuma's path intersecting with a waitress whose hometown was destroyed by a dragon, leading to unexpected trouble.
Thank you so much for that summation of the plot. That was really great. Now, before we get into talking about what I think about Monsters or 103 Mercies Dragon Domination, which is the title they give you on the screen, but not when you're looking for it just about anywhere else, I want to talk a little bit about the benefits and drawbacks of the shonen genre, because, and I said spoiler alert, and I meant this for a reason, This, as you just heard in the summary of the plot, this takes place in the One Piece universe. And so there's some, the reason why I want to talk about shonen advantages and drawbacks is because I think that this is a great demonstration of one of the advantages that long-running shonen action shows have. And one of the reasons why a show like Bleach has come back, why Dragon Ball Z never goes away for long, why Naruto ended and then started a new started basically a new series immediately after it, or pretty immediately after it. And the reason is that because of the popularity of these shows, you get a kind of run-on sentence scenario, is what I'm going to refer to it as, in terms of the story. And that is, the story has to keep going because it's so popular and it's making usually the publishers and everybody involved so much money that they want to make more of it. And in a creative, on a creative level, that's fun for authors like Ichiro Oda or what's his face, the guy who created Dragon Ball, or any of them, that can be a really big thing. That can be a really fantastical thing. Now, you also have things like Yu Yu Hakusho, specifically from Togashi, that, like, it's pretty clear when you, by the time you are at the end of Yu Yu Hakusho, that Togashi had an idea about Yu Yu Hakusho up until about the end of the Dark Tournament arc. And maybe that weird psychic stuff that happens after the Dark Tournament arc. But that's kind of it. Because if you watch most of Yu Yu Hakusho, there's the evil spirit, the Dark Spirit Detective arc, which is interesting, but not doesn't stand out in the way that other parts of the show have. And then he puts you in another tournament, because that's what the show was built best to do, and that's what he did with the Dark Tournament. And it just doesn't feel as good as the Dark Tournament. The Dark Tournament is like a masterclass in how to do a shonen battle tournament arc. But the reason is because if you look at that thing with 2020 Vision, if you look at Yu Yu Hakusho with 2020 Vision, it was not built to be the, like, end-all, be-all, like, run-for-generations kind of show. If you look at something like even Naruto, which did run for years, decades, I think it ran for over 10 years, actually. I don't think it ran for decades. I don't think it's a Dragon Ball Z scenario. But or a One Piece scenario. That show had to kind of be dragged along kicking and screaming to become a, like, universe in which people spent the maximum amount of time in. But the thing you get, the product you get from turning your show or your idea into something like that is really interesting and really valuable, is that you get a kind of fully fleshed out world, a world that answers questions like, and I've used this a zillion times, what does mail delivery look like in a ninja village? If you're a Naruto fan and you've watched Naruto and now Boruto, you know that shit. You know how they deliver mail in Konoha. Insane. Why would you ever need to know that? But it adds to the world, and it gives you, like, another layer of understanding of what's happening. Because now you're like, oh, this entire time, like, there's ninjas jumping around the village delivering mail. Even in the very early parts of Naruto, you see kind of the, like, workaday gig worker economy of, like, E-rank missions that is, like, not going to save the world, but is more going to, you know, get a cat out of a tree, you know, going to do all these things. And later on in Naruto, with Konohamaru, they show you that, like, those missions continue to exist. And, like, they continue to propagate and always be there as like a kind of training guidepost for the young shinobi and kunoichi of all the hidden villages. And I really like Naruto for this example, because Naruto, once again, had to be dragged kicking and screaming into this in a real way. But the ultimate example is always One Piece. One Piece has spent decades building its world and, you know, showing you the, like, ins and outs of all of this stuff. And it's also done something that I think is really important. And that is, because you have such a huge amount of time to fill, of, like, space to fill, either manga-wise or anime-wise, with the story, you kind of necessarily can't spend the entire time with your main cast, or with your main character, certainly. So what you end up doing is you end up spending some amount of time on side characters. On characters who, in other shows, would just be a supporting character. My favorite example of this will always be the episode, the OVA episode, I forget what it's called About Twice, from the, that's meant to be the connecting tissue between, I think it's seasons 1 and 2 of My Hero Academia. Because what that show does is it confirms everybody's suspicions about quirks. It does these really critical piece of world building that say, hey, not everybody's born with a great quirk, and not everybody's born with, like, a quirk that's safe to use. And it gives you, and it also gives you the context of, you know, what society thinks of people with weird quirks and all this stuff. And it sets up a conversation around a character like Himiko Toga, which is one of my favorite characters. She sits on my desk and stares at me, making a fun face. But for just those reasons. But my point is that long-running shonen can do something that other shows can't, and that is they can play within their own worlds because they spent so much time building those worlds up that the machinery is there to, like, go back in and, like, put in more detail or have a side story or, you know, for the original authors to go back and play in that world in a way that you weren't expecting. Now, the difference between long-running shonen and kind of what we're getting now, which is, I would call it, like, medium-run shonen, like, I suspect Chainsaw Man, it's not going to have the longest tail. The source material for Demon Slayer is currently finished. It's done. And, or like the Jujutsu Kaisen, I believe has ended. Like, I think the manga for Jujutsu Kaisen is done. And there's a reason why all the creators like Gege Akutami in terms of Jujutsu Kaisen, or what's his face, the crazy man who makes Chainsaw Man, or the author behind Demon Slayer, are ending these shows, are ending these properties pretty quickly, and that's because they probably don't want to spend a maximum amount of time in that scenario. Because you look at Oda, you look at Toriyama, sorry, I can't believe Toriyama's name slipped my mind earlier, or you look at Tite Kubo, and you see these massive worlds that, in the case of Tite Kubo, collapsed in on him. Like, Tite Kubo still had more story in him at the time to tell, and the anime was canceled, and the manga had to be shortened and end abruptly because it wasn't as popular as it once was. And he tied it off, and he did a pretty good job tying it off, actually. But there is that danger. That hasn't happened with a show like Dragon Ball, because it's this behemoth marketing thing that, like, Dragon Ball is eternal, and Dragon Ball Super will go on for as long as they need it to keep printing money. But it hasn't happened with One Piece because Ichiro Oda has been really good about, you know, bringing his stories through and keeping all of the storyline straight and keeping all of the characters straight. And that's a really difficult thing to do. He's also had the benefit of popularity being on his side for most of the time. One Piece is, for the most part, just a juggernaut. It never dips below in a way that many others have. But here's where I want to look at Togashi for a second again. After Togashi kind of almost did himself in, quite frankly, with Yu Yu Hakusho, when he went back to make another manga, he made Hunter x Hunter. I believe I've talked about Hunter x Hunter on this show before, but and I'm pretty sure you can go find that in the podcast feed, in whatever you listen to me right now. But what he did with Hunter x Hunter was he kind of deconstructed and he's continually deconstructing and reconstructing the shonen archetypes as he needs them to tell the story he wants and have fun with it. And it seems like he's genuinely having fun. And the way you can tell that is he goes on Twitter and he's like, "Hey, I'm feeling a little bit better this month. I'm going to try and do like a quick 5 chapters. Maybe my back will not murder me for like a month." Now, another version of this is Araki, who has developed a story function in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure that allows him to switch genres constantly, that allows him to completely throw out a cast of characters whenever he feels like it, replace it with an entirely new cast of characters, and tell a whole different story. The great example of this in my mind is Stardust Crusaders, JoJo's Part 3, is followed by Part 4, Diamond Unbreakable, which is a totally fucking weird Twin Peaks bizarro land thing that had nothing to do with anything else, and it's awesome. But Araki set that up with like the JoJo lineage and stands and all this other stuff. And he probably did that pretty specifically so he could avoid having to deal with the kinds of problems you have to deal with in something like Naruto, where you have this massive backlog of information that, yes, you can play with, but also you're tied to. And if I had to venture to guess why, like Gege Akutami or any of the more recent, especially with the Dark Trilogy, manga shonen manga standouts are ending their shows, because they don't want to. It's not that they don't want to, it's that they don't. That's not where their creative ambition is, to tell these big, sweeping, to build these big, massive worlds. And that's fine. But like I've said before on the show, I really enjoy the fact, I enjoy watching big budget shonen for two reasons. A, the budget. The budget makes it phenomenal to watch because you just pour money into these shows nonstop and they look great. And they look great for the most part. Or better than a show of its kind would look like with less money behind it. Is really what I would say. But the other reason is, they become these like experiments in world building. And like, once again, how do you deliver the mail? How do you deliver the mail in Konoha? What does it look like in My Hero Academia when you get a quirk that is best suited to crime? Or you get a quirk that is coded by society's evil, like Himiko Toga's. You know, what does it look like to get a driver's license in the Dragon Ball Z universe? You know, and those are all questions that those shows have answered, because not because they needed to, Not because they necessarily wanted to, but because they needed to for the sheer amount of time spent. And those are like almost accidental in a weird way. Because they're meant to be kind of fillers, but they become like part of the fabric of the shows and all that other stuff. Where it gets really interesting is shows like this, like Ichiro Oda's Monster, once again, I'm going to call it a subtitle, 103 Mercies, Dragon Domination, is an intentional prequel to the world of One Piece. And the way you know that, is, and you've heard it in the description I gave you, is that it takes place in the land of Wano hundreds of years, like over 100 years before the show. Before One Piece even starts. And so you have like the, and you key in pretty quickly that like, oh, this is Ichiro Oda, because it's like the illustration style looks like his. The main character, Ryuma, looks like an Ichiro Oda character. But the really interesting thing about this is that the writer really, Ichiro Oda, doing something really interesting here. In that he, you open up on the show and Ryuma is pretty much taken to be kind of a homeless asshole. And you meet this character who is this, like, he almost seems like a prototype. And this, I think this is probably really intentional. You meet this character who almost seems like a prototype of the swordsman guy. The swordsman guy who Zoro wants to defeat. I forget his name. Who seems like a prototype of Mihawk. And he's supposed to be, like, this master swordsman, and he was declared a master swordsman because he defeated a dragon, and this dragon that showed up, like, 10 years ago, and he's a big celebrity, and this girl who runs the tavern loves him because he saved her life. But what's interesting here is that the entire time, the main character never shifts away from being Ryuma. And they, at some point in passing, are like, yeah, this great swordsman is supposed to be like the king of Wano, who's unsurpassed as a swordsman, but nobody knows who he is, and nobody's seen him in a generation or something, in like years. And for the entire show, for the entire 25 minutes, up until a point, for maybe like the first, I almost want to say for the first 10 minutes, for the first 15 minutes of the 25 minutes, Ichiro Oda had the entire cast, had the entire universe of the show treat our main character like he's a total worthless idiot. Like he is... grandstanding, and he is picking fights with people, and everyone goes out of their way to like make him feel lesser than or small or whatever. But the really interesting part is, the show kind of makes you understand with showing and not telling, and showing fairly subtly, that he's not super wrong about what he's saying. He's maybe a little misguided, but he's not quite the jerk that everyone seems to be setting him up to be. And then the plot of the show has this guy in clown makeup show up, and he blows a dragon horn, and that means that a dragon shaman is about to show up, and that's kicked off by Ichiro, Ryoma picking a fight with him. But you see pretty quickly that this guy seemed to over fucking react, and this guy definitely set him up to be like, I've been attacked by by this Ryoma character. I feel wronged. I feel unsafe. I'm going to blow this dragon horn and summon a dragon. And after that horn's blown and the dragon, and like everybody's like, oh shit, a dragon's coming again. It already wrecked the town 10 years ago. Let's get everybody out of here. Let's evacuate. And they all evacuate to the next town. This is also a smart moment. They don't evacuate to the next town. They evacuate to like a nearby clearing. And so now the entire town's empty, and the like great swordsman guy, the great Mihawk looking guy, says, I shall stay behind to vanquish the dragon. But first I will feed this idiot to him, and I'll feed Ryoma to him too. And Ryoma like gets out of there. But the girl stays. I think the girl comes back for some reason to save the swordsman guy. But once you come back, you realize, as the audience member and as Ryoma and the girl realizes that these two, the guy in clown makeup and the Mihawk looking dude, set this all up. They did this intentionally, and they did this intentionally before, basically to loot the village of anything valuable. And they do this every couple years, and they repeat the cycle, and they use a dragon horn to kind of basically pillage where they may and where they want to. Only the last time, the Mihawk guy said, hey, wouldn't it be nice if I was also famous? And so he got himself, he like saves the girl intentionally to make himself famous so he could like live in the lap of luxury. And once Ryoma knows this, he's like, okay, that's it. These guys are fucking done. And he actually fights them. This is the first time you see the switch flip with Ryoma, and you realize, oh, he's a good samurai. They give you a little hint in the beginning, because one of the barkeeps at the bar that Ryoma crashes to get a free meal notices his sword, and is like, that sword just cut right through that other thing. That shouldn't have been possible. That's either a good sword or a good swordsman or both. And they show the sword, and if you're keen-eyed, you'll recognize the sword as one of Zoro's swords from One Piece. Much later on in the show, one of the swords I believe he picks up from Logtown. I'm probably misremembering, or I'm missing something there, because I haven't seen One Piece comprehensively, so I couldn't tell you exactly where all of Zoro's swords come from. But I know that he picked up a new set in two new ones in Logtown. But so the sword's noted, and you see like a flash of brilliance in the beginning. But then here you see how talented he really is, and he beats both guys to a pulp and kills the dragon. And then by the time he's gone, everybody's like, oh, that must have been the guy. That must have been the guy everybody talks about all the time. The guy who is, like, super famous. The guy who is the king of this land. And then they do a really cool thing. And I want to be clear, the Wano stuff, you don't know any of the Wano stuff. And the style of this show is Ichiro Oda-esque. But it's not so, but it doesn't feel exactly like One Piece in a way that, and the dragon is its own whole insane thing, in a way that doesn't clue you into this at all. And then after the screen fades to black, you get a pull out and like little white edges start on the end, and you pull out of the skull of a dead zombified samurai. And you see Zoro sitting on the ground, staring up at him as this samurai is like standing on the roof, and he's like, "I wish I could have fought you in your time, but I'll take the sword." And it's just so. This is one great way to do this kind of thing, to have this kind of cake and eat it too, for lack of a better term, and that is to go so far back in your story's history that no one can exist, that nothing can exist that did currently. And then you get the ability to have this conversation and with the audience in form of a story that is wholly original, but you can still very conveniently, if you're smart about it, which Oda clearly was, slot it into the thing everybody loves and therefore make it kind of like extra reading if you want it to be, in a way that something like a prequel like Boruto feels like, if you wanted to continue on Naruto's universe, this is a way you could do it. But if you look at, what's his face? That author's other work, like Samurai 8, Samurai 8 has nothing to do with Naruto, but it feels so thematically similar that there was no way for it to escape the terminal velocity of Naruto. A really odd thing from a different creator, Taikobu, Burn the Witch is set in the Soul Society. It's set in the same universe as Bleach, but it's a different section of the Soul Society. So what that seems to suggest, weirdly, is that the Soul Society is a lot like normal, like the human world, and that is, like, you can just go to another part of the Soul Society and it's British for whatever reason, and they're dragons. Which is very off, which is kind of what Burn the Witch feels like. And it's so strange and I love it, but it also doesn't hang together real well. And what Oda has done with the, like, world he set up for One Piece is he set up a scenario in which, like, each island is a thing unto itself. We just arrived at Egghead Island, and it's totally different from Wano. Wano is totally different from I think it was Whole Cake. You know, all of the islands have been deeply and meaningfully different in a way that feels like these characters are going through different cultures and encountering different cultures. And indeed, all of the characters on the One Piece Straw Hat Pirate crew are notably from different cultures. Like, and at different points, you've encountered parts of the show where it felt like, oh, this is where this character is either from or deeply belongs. In the case of Wano, Zoro feels like he belongs in the world of Wano because he's a traditional samurai-style character. In the case of Nami, she seemed like she belonged, like, in the Arlong Park, kind of, like, because that was where she was literally from. Same thing with Usopp. Sanji, you've met Sanji's parents and Sanji's family, and you found out where he belonged, but he also, he came, essentially, from the Baratie. And he's informed by a lot of his experiences on the Baratie, still, to this very moment. And Chopper from where Chopper came from. But by doing that, you can have these countries, you can essentially have countries that have their own history that you can choose to play with or not play with, whatever you want to do. And it's just, when I watched this, I wasn't planning on talking about it because when I realized, like, oh, there's a 25 minute one episode thing, I don't think it's really worth it. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, no, it is worth it. It's this huge phenomenon of a show like One Piece that has a side story that is essentially a prequel, but is not necessary in any way to enjoy the rest of the show, but is also fully confessing to play within the world of One Piece by the end of it. And that's why I gave a huge spoiler warning, because it would, like, in order to talk about what was all the interesting parts of this, you had to mention the Zoro thing and the fact that that this character was a legendary samurai from Wano and all that story-spoiling stuff. But on that note, this is where I'm going to end it. I know it's a little shorter. It's actually not that much shorter. It's for 35 minutes. I usually go for 40, 45, but hey. If you like this episode, new episodes come out every... They're supposed to come out every Wednesday. I'll remember to do the Wednesday news show this week. I swear. I'm over my jet lag, finally. Hi, Kie. They come out every Thursday, which is a new show like this about a new property or manga or anime or movie or whatever. But until next time, I have been Alex. This has been Lunchbox Radio, and I will talk to you later.